when you're editing, you discover, like at the beginning, it's trash. Like I look at shit I've edited before and I'm like, man, why is that so disgusting? It's like choppy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at the time I was like, man, this is great stuff. And now I'm like, this is choppy and nasty. Yeah. It's disgusting. Blue, it doesn't roll together. You know, like color grading. And I wasn't doing any lighting and white balancing. Yeah. So I'm like, this got this really cool cinematic look. And the rest of it looks like... And I'm like, man, this is all drained of color. And this one here is like perfect. And I can't put them back. I can't connect them.
Like that live play one I did a couple years ago. It came to a point where it was so pathetic that the crowd was not laughing at the film, but laughing at the actors.
Yeah. That was Isaiah Werner and David Marfoglio, two close friends of mine who I grew up with, and we share the love to create things. We started out making little crazy videos together with whatever we could get our hands on, and we just had fun. Of course, we didn't have a production crew, so we were the writers, directors, actors, cinematographers, editors, visual effects artists, and that's how we learned. We didn't go to film school, but we learned through experience. Over the years, we improved our craft and started making short films, commercials, and a lot more. We have a lighthearted conversation in this episode about our experiences, the mistakes we've made, the lessons we've learned over the years, and how they turned us into the creators that we are today. If you don't know who I am, I'm David Hawkins, and I'm here to help you develop and perfect your creative skills by sharing the experiences of experts and friends in the industry. Without further delay, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to the AVPers Audio Visual Production Podcast with David Hawkins, where we team up with industry professionals to help you bring your creative skills to the next level.
What made you, both of you, what do you think made you get that creative? What do you feel?
I kind of just had to be like, I was always loud and annoying, honestly. And I kind of figured, well, if I'm loud, I need to be funny, or I need to do some sort of performance. Because I can't just be loud and boring.
Get something positive out of it.
Right. You can't just be loud and like boring, and because then it's like people want to stick you in a closet, you know? So like they're annoying, they want to smack you, but you're hilarious. So they're like, you know, we gotta put up with this funny guy. You know, he's always going to say something stupid. And they get annoyed at you for, you know, never taking anything seriously. But I just kind of had to try to get attention. I have like four children in my family. So my parents were worn thin with us with patience, you know? So I just had to like get out there and be loud and... You know, I think what gave me creativity was just, I didn't mind going playing by myself. Mm-hmm. And I would just tell myself stories. So, like, I would have these stupid toys, and I would just be, like, making a little mini movie right there.
Yeah.
You know, with these toys. I'd be like, you know, this is so-and-so, and his, you know, and I'd just be taking stuff from, like, films I've watched and the ideas of it, and I would just go create, like, storylines. And I remember with my siblings just messing around, like, I had a whole Western phase. I loved Westerns. And then we would just be like these cowboys or whatever, like gunfighters. And I would just, you know, the generic storyline, and that's just how it is. So it's like, I'm the fastest gun in the West or some stupid idiot. Or, but it would be like, just, I would be making mini film series, really. Because right. I was the character and I knew what I wanted to be. So the character could be a little bit different each one, but it was basically the same guy.
Yeah.
Because these are things I liked out of like characters in the West and what I wanted to be. And then I would just be that. We'd be shooting each other, whatever stupid. And we had like various different games. You know, they had their interest and I had mine. And I just kind of learned to tell a story first to myself and then tell a story with others.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into like just writing and stuff. It was just eventually, like for me, I don't know. I just, it was too hard. Like I couldn't just sit and watch things. I couldn't sit and just watch a really awesome movie. I wanted to make that then. I wanted to go write.
Right.
And even like as it would all be the same. It would be like copy. I would literally just be copying these things. But I loved it. It was so cool. I would create characters that are just watered down, like slightly different name, but it, basically they have to look. They basically look the same because I like the way the actor looked.
Right.
You know, I like the character he was. You know, and so I would just, you know, kind of go and create those guys.
You might kill me for saying this, but I remember when you were maybe around the same age that you're talking about, but like 6 and 7. You used to run around the school talking about the Isaiah Show, and you would go interview people for the Isaiah Show.
I am going to kill you for saying that.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Listen, I was just all over the place, dude. Honestly, I've had so many different phases. Like, I wanted to have a show because I love conversation. I wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to be a secret agent. I wanted to be in freaking Star Wars, you know. I wanted to be in space. I wanted to do all these things, you know. So I wanted to have a talk show, but I also wanted to be a news guy. I don't know. All I can say is I had like 1,000 different phases, and I just got interested in something.
So you had that creativity. And I think, to be honest, I think all kids have that creativity growing up. But a lot of them just don't fuel it.
Like right now, you know, it's different. I didn't have access to the internet. Like, right now, everybody has, like, I didn't have much of video games. It's crazy when you think about, like, I'm only, like, 20-something, you know. I'm not super old, but I sound like I'm 40 before internet was invented. Because everybody now, you know, had some, and I had internet later on, but I'd already built that by the time I got internet. Because originally, I didn't have internet. You know, we just had, like, the television, and it would be whatever my mom wanted to watch, really, because she ran the TV. Then my dad would be just be, you know, we would go watch some movies, whatever. If I wasn't doing that, right, I'm all by myself. Like, I didn't have a game. I don't have a phone. You know, I didn't have a Xbox or all these, you know, these different things. I had a few books. So I couldn't, the children are losing that creativity.
Exactly.
Because they're not going and creating, right?
Yeah.
It's like the same with health, right? Like, kids used to be healthy because they would just go out and play.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't working. They weren't working out. They were just running around because they wanted to chase each other.
Yeah.
And now it's like they're all sitting in the room eating freaking chips and donuts and junk food and playing on the Xbox and playing on the phone and playing on all these, you know, different watching shit. And we got the internet going and just, you know, all the time. You can do it all the time.
Yeah.
So there's no motivation or need.
Exactly.
To create.
May I add that with all of this technology and everything moving from second to second, it's also shortened the attention span.
I've noticed that myself.
To be creative.
Yeah.
There's no focusing.
Right.
I've noticed that myself. You know, like, it's hard for me to watch, like, series and movies now. It's just like, I got a YouTube attention span. YouTube has ruined my life. Honestly.
But it's true, though, because in order to create anything that anybody will care to watch, you have to take time to plan it out. You have to take time to draw it out. Like, drawing a picture, for instance. It takes time. It takes effort. And if you don't have that attention span, you'll just get sick and tired of the effort that goes into it. Now, where are you now? I mean, you grew up with this creativity, constantly trying to make stuff, wanting to make stuff. Where did it take you? What comes next?
It took me into... See, I came from having the ability to write and to create and not knowing what to do. And I dealt with the people who learned from schooling or whatever, or just practice in some cases. I see the difference in people who've never practiced, people who learn from schooling. What it takes to create things, you know, the path of storyboarding, you know, and how to put things together. And so I had to learn all these things. So me, I'm just like ideas. So this is what I have a little bit different way of doing it. And I used to clash with certain people because they were like, this is how you have to do it. Right. Cause they went to school and learned about it, or they've made some things, but they have a set in stone, rigid pattern of creating and it has to go that way. And so I started to clash with these people cause I didn't know what to do. And I'm trying to figure stuff out. And they're like, well, you have to do it this way. And I'm stubborn, so I'm like, I don't want to do it that way, because the way I do it, it just comes to me.
Yeah,
I developed the gift. I don't think I was given the gift. I think I developed it. I mean, I some things, you know, you're given, but I think majority I developed it just kind of being thrown into the situation. I think the environment that I was in, just having to create, like, give myself a story. I think I was slightly predisposed, I would say, so that when the circumstances came together, you know, I had some of the pieces in genetically and I get, you know, my dad worked with music and stuff. So I had a little bit of, you know, certain predisposition to it. But I think that majority of, like, learning how to tell a story and put things together and being able to write just came from me telling a story to myself.
Yeah.
Cause I was bored and I needed to do that. And so the circumstances put that together. And so now I have decent ideas and I have ideas of how the story goes together, but I don't know about storyboarding and I don't know about, you know, how to,
I didn't know the technical correct way.
I didn't know the technical correct way.
Right.
And so I started dealing with people who didn't have as much creative spark as I did.
Mm-hmm. But they knew the technical.
They knew how to write, but it came from, they in other words, they kind of worked around. Yeah. So they didn't, like, I would get an idea and I would just start putting stuff together versus they would storyboard and set out, okay, what is the characters, you know. I remember this guy trying to tell me, like, how, you know, like the basics, like every... I don't know exactly how he decided it was going to be, but it was like, you know, you need to have a person and they need to have this thing that gets in the way. And he started going this, like, how every film has to be this way.
Yeah.
Every story has to be this way. And I said, well, no, because people do, you know, things all the time that are out of the box and they work.
Right.
And so for me...
And that's what makes them work.
Yeah. For me, I think if it works, right? Yeah. Like, you can take a leap. You can go off the ledge. You can go out of the box. You can go way in the left field if it works. If it doesn't work, you look stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's trash. Because a lot of people who have done things, they can, dude, this is so out of the box.
Yeah.
And then it just bombed because it was boring. It was terrible. It didn't tell a story. Because you can, if you, that's what I love about, like, parody. Mm-hmm. When you see parody of, like film styles or films, you see recognizing the uniqueness of it. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, man, this is funny. Notice this, you know, this is done in everyone. Like, oh, every cult classic, you know, like the suitcase that is like, they never show what's inside of it. And it's like the bright glowing light, you know, you have cliche almost.
Yeah.
But not fully cliche. It's not annoying as cliche, but it's like everything has its style. And you recognize like, okay, if you want to create this in this style, this is what needs to be done.
Right.
But you can create something that goes through numerous styles.
Right.
And dabbles in all these things. And that is unique. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of basically just started to, like, I wanted to create stuff for a long time. Eventually I just started like getting people to help me do things. And I started just learning how to marry the two, the technical aspect and the creativity, so that I could work with these people that have high technology without like completely driving them out of their skull because they can't understand what I'm trying to do here, while still being creative and making my view.
You've written these short films. You've directed commercials. You've directed videos. Did you go to film school?
No.
No.
Not as it were. In other words, I didn't go to a film school. No.
Right.
I watched some stuff with people I've gotten to film school.
Right.
I've gotten aspects. You know, I guess you could call it the YouTube school of filming.
Exactly. And that's what I want. I know that, of course. But I wanted to get at that because I've had a lot of people ask me, do you need to go to film school? Or that just have the idea you need to go to film school in order to make films. And that's not true, especially in this day and age, because you've got the internet where you can learn so many things.
Sure, for free.
For free, exactly. If you want to get a very detailed, structured, this is how you do it, this is how everybody else has done it, and it works, film school is for you. But it's also expensive. And another positive thing about film school is networking. Starting at home in your little bedroom, you're not going to get to hold a Red Epic camera and film.
There's definitely a lot of positives in it.
There's a lot of positives to
I would say a lot of positives. Yeah, networking. You get to know people.
But yeah,
you get the idea. You get to understand a little bit of the industry and how to do these things. You get that technical knowledge.
Right.
I find that it kills creativity a lot. I find that there's a lot of rigidity. It's very rigid in schooling. And I think if you're a person who, because a lot of people work that way, right? If you're a person who works from a rigid perspective, or a person who works from a, I'm not going to say rigid because that could be slightly offensive, but a very, I would say numerical, like a by the numbers perspective, or you know, they need to have a course, you know, you need to have steps, you need to, you know, or and you have people, you meet people. In other words, like,
exactly,
that's another thing. You can talk to these people, you can ask questions on YouTube and internet videos. You don't often get to ask, as you don't get that one-on-one experience.
Right.
So there's a lot of and you learn how to deal with actors and deal with people.
Something I want to get at, and I want to get your input on it too. You made a great point where you said that I don't think I was born with this creative gift, quote unquote. You developed it. A lot of people believe that creativity is something that you're born with. I disagree. I think everybody is creative in one way or another, but I think creativity is a mindset. Meaning, just like you can train yourself to work out every day and become disciplined in that way, or you can train yourself to write with your left hand, or you can train yourself to play an instrument. You can train your thought process to be creative. And that's another thing about film school that I think is interesting. Not that it kills creativity, but a lot of the very successful people in the industry didn't start with some professional training. They started with a little wind-up camera. They were forced to be creative with what they had, and that has allowed them to then scale that up.
That's even how a lot of the Apple, Microsoft, stuff like that. They started in garages.
Exactly. And I think there's an added benefit that you get from that dirt cheap, nitty gritty.
Willpower.
Yeah, willpower.
But they have no rules, right?
Exactly.
This is the thing about creativity, right? We have to understand, we have an idea what creativity is. Mm-hmm. But really, creativity is just creation.
Yeah.
Right? So anyone who creates something is creative. Yeah. They made something. Whether it's from them, right? If you make, even if it's based on something or it comes from something else, you know, maybe you got ideas from something else, like that's a part of you, right? And you're creative. Maybe not as, you know, maybe it's a little harder for you or whatever, but you don't have to, you know, we have ideas that have kind of been locked in. Networks, right? Like network TV, you know, it's like, that's why part of why the internet age has become streaming services, video on demand has made this massive change, because it's difficult to create under certain, when you have like certain parameters that are locked in, and you have to be able to sandwich in commercials. You have to fit so many commercials in, commercial breaks, You have only 30 minutes. It has to fit in this. It has to be this exact time to the second for it to go on our network. Then it's hard to be creative.
Right.
That's why what you get is templates and everyone follows those. You're like your sitcoms, right? It's got a template.
Yeah.
Because this is what works and this is how it fits. But now we have the video on demand where it's now you can create a story. And that's what I love. Like I love a story. That's why people, dramas get huge, like political dramas. There's not a lot of fight scenes and not a lot of adventures, not action packed. But it's a story. And that's the thing about us. We're all humans. We're all about stories, right?
Yeah.
We grab on to like something we can understand and we can read the story. We can see the events. We can understand the characters.
Yeah.
And so you can build dynamic characters and interesting characters. And sure, I love to see nuance in characters and you're like, in the subconsciously, you're putting things together about how this character is this way, what makes them.
You're learning about
it. But you're learning, and not everyone notices those things, but you see a story and it's not hindered by time limits, by it needs something dramatic for the commercial break. We need some, dramatic stop so we can go to commercial and everyone can come back after commercial, right? You can make an interesting story and you can focus on your creation. And that's what is making this, I think it's the golden age for just film industry.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, you know how they make a lot of books and book series and then they make movies off of those books.
Right.
What a lot of people say, and even I've seen in most cases, the book is usually better than the movie because on, the book, there was no watching it. There was no seeing the action. They had to go into such detail to describe it, to make your mind be able to see it. They couldn't just show 20, 30 minutes of action-packed, fighting scenes. They had to describe this stuff with such a vocabulary that when you read it, as you read it, you saw it.
As they saw it.
In your mind.
Right. Yeah. And so a lot of times I think the books are better because they just have that much more creativity in them.
And that makes me think of an interesting thing about, how we get locked into things. Like you notice, to me, I could see that in some ways. But in some ways I've watched things. If I've read the book, it's like if we read the book, then the series or the movie is rarely word for word exactly the same.
Right.
But you get locked into what you saw first. Like you read the book, so when you see the film, it's like, well, that's not how it's supposed to be because the book.
Tell me something. I don't know if I'm the only one that I doubt that I am. When I used to read like novels or books with a nice story, I would literally picture the whole thing complete with background music, with everything in my head, like a full movie.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not the only one.
I would even, because some of the times they didn't describe the character properly, I would pull somebody in real life that I know that somewhat resembles that character.
That can play.
And that would be their face through the whole book.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I would know this character because it's somebody I've seen before.
Yeah.
And that's the part of thing about me, it's connecting to people because we all see it differently, right?
Right.
Exactly. Like if we all read the same book, we would all have a different vision of that person.
Yeah, and if we printed our vision out, we would have three totally different
movies. It's the same with music. Like I've noticed, I can listen to a song at a certain time when I'm dealing with something and it'll fit to what I'm dealing with, right? To me, it means this. And I can read the lyrics and go and read about what the artist talked about, what it actually meant to them, why they wrote it. And that's true. But it also, at the same time, still means the exact meaning to me.
Yeah.
Because I've made that emotional connection. That's what it's all about. It's about emotion.
Yeah.
It's about connecting, Things that don't have an emotional connection, whether it's, it's sad or it's exciting, or it's just intriguing, it's a mystery, whatever, or it's funny, it makes us laugh. It's got to have a connection. If you don't connect, then we don't connect. We don't get it. We don't grab onto that.
Right.
You can think of all the things that you just thought were boring and it's like, it doesn't, or you just didn't like,
right.
And it's like, yeah, but I just, it doesn't speak to me.
Yeah. David, I want to get to you. Tell us about your start. What do you feel led you to be a creative person?
You guys know I've always been the quiet kid.
Yeah.
I've always had a creative mind. And even now I don't know. I haven't figured out how to harness it because I jump around from stuff, from thing to thing. Like when I listen to music, mm-hmm. I'll be listening to music and I'll come up with like verses, like half a song in my head with totally different lyrics, but with the tune and everything, that's how it needs to be. And that'd be an awesome song, but I'm at work. So I don't write it down and then
right.
I can't recreate it and I forget about it. And growing up, I came up with ideas for inventions and then, sadly somebody already created them. So I think I've always had a creative mind. Mainly, I like vocabulary. So I read a lot of older books.
Nice.
When I got into a little bit of the film projects and stuff, the commercials and little videos, I was more focused on how things should be placed in a scene and like different words in the lines that may make it more intriguing or just make the scene pop better versus being able to write, because I can't write scripts very well because I don't know how to harness the creativity. It's spontaneous. It just boom and I think about it and then it's gone again.
Right. So you're better at taking somebody's vision that they've kind of set on the table and making it
tweaking it better. Yeah.
Definitely bring them in for refreshing ideas.
Yeah. I'm a bit similar. Every once in a while, I'll come up with this amazing creative idea, and I can't even give myself credit for it because I don't know where it came from.
Right.
But if somebody comes to me with an idea, and it can be a great idea or it can be a bland idea.
I want to call it creator's guilt. You ever have that? Where you notice an influence. Well, I want to say creator. Well, it's kind of, to me, like when I'm not giving yourself credit.
Right.
Or have you ever worked on something and then you notice the influence where it came from, where you get certain ideas, and then you feel like you're just copying, or you feel like... you know, well, you know, it wasn't 100% your idea, but it's not the same. That's the thing. It's not the same as what they did.
Right. Well, there's inspiration. I think all creative people have some sort of inspiration from somewhere. You're getting ideas from other places. Don't copy them and plagiarize them, but you can get your inspiration from those places.
Well, what kind of novels do you like?
Some fantasy. I don't really read much novels anymore.
Same.
To be honest with you. And I was actually thinking to myself when I asked that question earlier, if I read a novel today, would I still have that full experience as ingrained as I am in production now? There's YouTube all over the place. You can
watch
movies, you can watch films. My brain, I don't think, would have that same level of forced creativity as it would have back then. I don't think I would have that same experience.
Last couple I tried to read, I couldn't. I was able to bring in most of the picture, but there's some things that were lacking that weren't used to be there. For me, it was the Sherlock Holmes books, especially with better vocabulary and just learning to look at a different picture than what's there, and Preston and Child novels. Specifically, the Gideon Crew series. I loved that series.
Wow. What is it about that series that you loved that resonated with you?
I guess the main character, Gideon Crew, was very relatable. He had a terminal illness, and he kept getting himself in a lot of trouble trying to find stuff, cures, like going to different islands, and got entrapped working for this billionaire that was really all about himself, you know, all to try to find this terminal illness. And after, six books? It finally basically ends with the billionaire being able to walk again and everybody getting what they want except for this guy. And I don't think there's going to be another book because I think he's dead. It's just a really relatable character and a lot of adventure, but at the same time, it was still kind of based in reality.
Yeah. That's, to be honest, something about superhero movies. You always know, it's almost like there's no point in watching the movie because all this turmoil, all this character angst and everything that's going on, you know at the end of the movie, the superhero's going to win, he's going to save the day, everything's going to be better.
Watch it. You're treading on Isaiah's sacred ground.
I know, I see that.
No.
But I think they kind of switched it up in like with the latest Avengers movie, Endgame and things like that.
I think that's what makes certain superheroes like Spider-Man, like Batman, more compelling.
Right.
Than others. Because you take a situation like Superman, who had the Superman complex, it's kind of like, yeah, it was like, this dude can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. They had to create this thing to make him weak. But you always knew Superman's going to find something, he's going to win. But you deal with characters like, that's why Spider-Man became huge, because it dealt with, him just being this teenage kid who's like trying to figure life out. And it's like, well, he's got to fight these villains, figure out how to fight them by himself. He's also got to like take care of his aunt, and he's got to like get enough money to
half the time it goes wrong before it ever
exactly
gets better.
And so it's a turn. I don't want to go too deep in comics type thing, but it's about getting creative. But there's something you said earlier, you said forced creativity. Because I've thought about that this week, that because you're forced to be creative, right?
Yeah.
But you can't force creativity. In other words, you can't just sit like. I've had difficulty like when I couldn't come up with something.
Right.
And just be like, I'm going to sit here and write something.
Yeah.
I can't come up with something. But the best thing for me, actually, I found is if I have phone to wall, is I take a walk.
Yeah.
For me, if I just take a walk and just unplug, leave my phone down, don't listen to music or anything, just walk around, honestly, half a mile maybe, my brain will just put it together. Even just problems with myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'll just walk and my brain will just start putting together like what I need to do. And I'll be like, all right, here's what I got to do. And I'll start writing. And I got to go stop and write it down. You're not going to stop because I'll forget.
Do you know why that is?
I think I've read because it's like your brain works on it in the background. But do you know why that is?
No.
Give us the science for it.
When you sit down to write something and you're not in a relaxed state or something, you're just stressing out about, man, I don't have any ideas. What are some ideas? That's the worst state of mind for you to be in.
To create.
For creativity. Because your brain's releasing stress chemicals, cortisol, maybe even adrenaline, depending on how on edge you are.
That's how most of my assignments at school went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so your brain is in a horrible state for creating. So when you actually just go and do something mundane, like walking or shower thoughts, taking a shower or something like that, your brain is able to assimilate all that creativity and make it work.
Right.
So that's really interesting.
That's why I think we as humans to create, you know, we need just a level of freedom.
Yeah.
To be able to just put things together, you know, and that's the way it goes. Even to like music theory, right? You think about music as a theory. In other words, like music theory is a theory. Not music itself is a theory. Music could possibly exist theoretically, but music theory is like, okay, here's this rule is theory generally works. But like I said, towards the beginning, I said, you know, if it works, it's outside the box. If it works, it works. Right.
Yeah.
It's like if it just connects, if it just the dots connect and it makes sense, even if it breaks the rules and breaks some of the rules, hey, it works, man. And that's what it's all about, is just putting, you know, making things. Because creative, like, there's a certain insecurity. You ever notice that? Where it's like you're kind of making, it's part of you. Like when you create something, it's a part of yourself.
Yeah.
It's an investment of yourself. You're building this thing. You're investing. It's from you.
Mm-hmm.
Like aspects of your mind, your thoughts. Like it's very difficult to create something without a certain part of yourself and your ideals and what you believe in and your values in it.
Yeah.
Because that's to make something meaningful. Like you can just put, you know, you can just be mess around all the time. You can put something, you know, that isn't very connective to people.
Right.
But it's difficult because you're investing time in that. But if you're serious about it. To perfect it, you have to invest a lot of time.
Yeah.
Then you throw this out there. That's like, you know, why, like, you know, people get started in like YouTube and then they like see the comments and people are just like negative because you're putting yourself out there.
Right.
A piece of you out there.
And you can.
And people are like, oh, that sucks. And you feel it. Right. And you have to be able to just kind of realize almost, you know, to a point where you're like, hey, I'm not making this for everyone else. I'm making it for me. Even though you are making it for everyone else, yeah. Right? Because you're making it for other people to see.
I was watching a video from Ken Lewis the other day, and it was about, it was really about art, developing yourself as an artist and putting yourself out there. But he was talking about how if you look at people like Lady Gaga, like Ariana Grande, modern, what people would consider pop artists, using Lady Gaga for an example, her first hit record was Just Dance. All of y'all know that song.
Yeah.
Just Dance. It'll be okay.
I'll have you do the whole like after
it. And it'll get stuck in your head. Okay. But that was a very pop, what was going on at the time,
right.
Fit in.
Mm-hmm.
If she had come out with her very first single, Bad Romance song,
right.
That would not have gotten radio play. No. It would not have gotten accepted by any... It wouldn't have gotten accepted by anybody.
Nobody at the time would have wanted to hear that.
Exactly.
Having not known who she is.
Right. But he was able to build an audience coming out with something that everybody would have readily accepted and get her fans and say, okay, now I got you.
Oh, here's social creatures, really, right? That's interesting because we're kind of social creatures.
Right.
We don't want to stick our... We don't want, like, as fans, you don't want to stick your stuff out there.
Yeah.
And people aren't ready to jump on the train of somebody nobody knows about.
Right. Often.
Well, that showed with her progressively outrageous outfits.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, people...
But if she just came out like that, people...
Yeah, everybody would have...
Like, who's this crazy lady?
The meat suit, you know.
Yeah.
It took a while for people to accept that type of stuff, but they realized, hey, I like what she's selling.
Right. Yeah. Once I got invested in her, at the beginning, you know, like, if she just came out like that, people were like, man, this person is deranged. Because they don't understand that this person is a peculiar version of creativity.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's extremely outside the box. But you have to build... Because people already connect on things they don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to come out and do something that's widely accepted. I mean, people like Eminem, who came out with he had Infinite, of course, but then when he got signed with Dr. Dre, he did the Hi, My Name Is, and he did a bunch of really outlandish, outrageous stuff, and he got a lot of recognition over time. So you don't have to come out and do something just to fit in.
Yeah, in other words, but you're saying that because we were talking about, right, being yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can still be yourself in your creation.
Exactly.
And even then, like, even I think that that's not extremely, the first thing she did isn't extremely far from the rest of the music she does.
Exactly.
In other words, she didn't change everything. She wasn't like a country singer or like a death metal singer who decided, I'm going to beat pop, do pop because it's huge. You know, it wasn't that far from what she was doing.
But it was a healthy medium.
Yes. You hide a little bit of your crazy.
Right.
But I think, you know, everyone who creates as who's every really creative person is
a little bit crazy.
It's hard to be really creative and sane.
That's mostly why I listen to music, honestly. And I had to tell my boss because he told me no more music on the job because I need to focus. Well, on when I'm focusing, it's great. But when I'm not doing something where I have to focus, I go crazy. And so the first few days that I wasn't listening to anything, I was rambling on the job. And they're like, well, where are you coming up with all this stuff? I was like,
this is funny. This is me. Funny. I wonder if this is...
I use music to escape my own brain.
I wonder if this is something that's a commonality between us, because that's the same thing for me. Honestly, I go crazy. And it's funny because people tell me, like, I see you walk in and you're talking to yourself. It's like, yeah, even like when I'm not listening to music, I'm talking to myself.
Yeah.
Right, like as a kid, like I didn't change that much. Change when I got an adult.
Yeah,
I don't talk to myself like me. Like I change accents, I change characters. Yeah. I'm literally like I'm having like this movie. Like, dude, I'll be over here like doing like some dramatic scene from. I'm about to like some like now you will die, and I'm over here like I'm like now look I'm like shit. That person thought I was talking. Yeah, I'm in the middle of the store. I'm walking to the store and I'm just like
schizophrenic.
I'm losing my mind. I'm like, man, what am I? This person said that someone's gonna die. Just walking by me, this crazy guy, you know, that's like, you're in your brain.
Right.
You know, you're just talking to yourself. Your brain's just going off 100%.
Every creative person I know is a bit eccentric. If you can.
Eccentric's a nice way to say it.
Yeah. No, really. Because if you look at Jeff Goldblum.
One of my favorite actors.
Love Jeff. I don't know about favorite actors. Jeff Goldblum was hilarious. Very eccentric. He has these eccentric commercials now. Love that guy. It's
ridiculous. But everybody's okay with that because he's Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, but he didn't start off the way.
There's no other reason.
Like, yeah, he didn't start off the way.
There's no other
reason. He was in like crime dramas, right?
Yeah.
Like he didn't start off eccentric and, you know, Jeff Goldblum.
Even in Jurassic Park, he was
slightly eccentric, but it was tamed down. I noticed the difference.
Jeff Goldblum, but he just...
Yeah, well, now that he's made us rapport, now he's Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Now Jeff Goldblum... he has a name, recognition. He has the freedom to just go off. So then he'll go to the director.
Yeah.
He'll go to the director and be like, hey, let's do this, whatever, you know, and the director will work with him. Instead of like someone just, you know, the first movie, then I'm going to be 100% receptive to your input. And so he'll work to, you know, he's got a name, people work with him, and he'll be allowed to kind of just go off and be
himself.
Sporadic. So that's the thing. I think the industry starting to see the value of people who have come up from outside the box perspective, who aren't coming straight from this rigid idea, who are out here just creating things with freedom to do it because they don't have this big kind of all this money weighing down and people say, nope, 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 nope. So they're allowed to create stuff.
Yeah.
And now that's why you see these people coming in and making, you know, being given the reins to these massive production companies. It's like
in a lot of films, some of the most memorable lines in some of the most memorable films.
We're
improvised. Ad-libs. That wasn't even in the script. And the actor just came up with it and it was brilliant. So they rolled with it.
Yeah.
And it works.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're so crazy that people laughed or did something extra in the background and they had to leave it in because it was just that great. Yeah.
And that's what you have to leave room for that. Exactly. I think when you're creating a film or a video, you have to leave room for... I've been on sets with people who have written something that they want you to say word for word exactly.
Right.
And then they want to give you the exact inflection, exactly every way to pronounce, you know, which syllables to accentuate, all these different things. And it's like, it's over.
I can understand it because it's their film and their script, but at the same time, it's constricting.
Well, see, that's the problem, right? You have to understand when you're writing a film, it's not going to come out the way you see it.
Yeah.
When you see it at the beginning, it's in your brain, but there are a lot of concessions you're going to have to make.
Yeah.
You see it this ideal thing, but you can't just take that and throw it on the paper, like into the video, because there's concessions, things look differently. It, you see, and, I mean, listen, it works. You have your, you know, your Stanley Kubricks, these people who do 140 some odd takes or whatever, yeah. You know, 147 times. And if the paper's blown in the wrong way, whatever, you know, and it works. Yeah. They're a genius, but more often than not, you have to leave room.
Yeah.
You have to know. You have to know how to pick your battles. You have to know certain things. Okay, this is what I need. I want this to be this way. It has to be this way. But and it comes out a lot better when you allow your actors, especially if you have great actors or people with great personalities, to allow them to make the character theirs.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to have an open mind.
I mean, you take like the Deadpool movies, right? Like you take your Ryan Reynolds, who embodies the character very well, and but he's also allowed like the massive freedom to embody that character and to explore that character, to make that character. If it was a different way, if it was like under a different style of directing and you know, it would be hard. It would be bad. It would be, yeah. it would be that, you know, or it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the, that character, but there is a place for that rigid set thing.
Something I want to ask though, and I want to start with you, David, what is some advice that you would give somebody starting out who's maybe a little bit behind where you are? They're creative, they're a little bit crazy, they want to express themselves creatively, either through making videos, making music, or whatever it might be. What advice would you give somebody?
Okay, I have to pull from my own experiences. First thing is, don't let other people dictate what your creativity is or where it goes. I think that was a mistake I made growing up, is that I let people decide, you know, where my mind led. You know, you need to practice, you need to get with some friends, unless you can do it alone. And you need to practice, you know, making some films, short stuff, to see really where it best suits you, whether you're the writer or the director of the film, if you like running cameras, getting that right angle, or if it's something simple as like set director, making sure everything is in its place. And that's the best advice I can give.
I think that's really great advice. And that's in fact something that I tell people. A lot of people, this, I guess it's kind of a natural apprehension to starting something, because you feel like, I don't know what I'm doing, so I can't start.
It's overwhelming.
It's exactly, it's overwhelming.
When you consider everything that's ahead of you.
Yeah, the first step is the hardest though. And really all you got to do is take that first step. Like you're saying, go out with your friends and shoot a video. It was freaking, I think I just posted it on my Instagram.
Yeah, I saw
it. You saw it with James Cameron. It says, pick up a camera. This is James Cameron said this. Pick up a camera, shoot something. No matter how small, no matter how cheesy, no matter whether your friends and your sister star in it. Put your name on it as director. Now you're a director. Everything after that, you're just negotiating your budget and your fee. And
that's nice.
Yeah. And I'm not saying go out and start telling big movie studios that you're a director and you want to direct this movie. They'll laugh at you. But go start something. And that's the only way you'll, like you said, find your place. You'll get familiar with the camera. You'll get familiar with directing. You'll get familiar with writing. You'll get familiar with all these things. And that's how you get started.
And don't let the Karens get you down.
Facts.
Yeah, I think you just do it, you know? Like, honestly, like, writing, like, I've written probably 200 stories.
Mm-hmm.
190 of them were trash, honestly. Like, I honestly, I've written short stories, I've written, like, long, because for a long, I would just write, probably more than 200. A lot of them were simplistic, because I was just starting, you know, but I just wrote, you know, I was bored, and I wanted to create characters, and I was interested in this thing, and I would just write, and it would be, you know, the fight scenes would, listen, some of them, you know, would be almost sometimes seem to be like shot for shot something I saw on something else, but I would just start building these things. I would just start. Exactly. And that's the thing, you just gotta go, because it's a muscle.
Exactly.
If you fall off, you'll notice.
Mm-hmm.
Like when it comes back, it's hard, and you're like, why is this difficult? It's like, at a time it wasn't hard, but the more you do it, it gets easier and easier, because nuance, you know, nuances and skills, you'll learn that on the way.
Exactly.
Like, there's a lot of things I know now that I didn't know at the beginning. But I learned them not from sitting and someone telling me this is how it's done. I learned from messing up and doing or you know, but listen, now we know you can't do this.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, you know. And I learned just the simple nuances, things that like, okay, this doesn't work together, or, you know, this works optimally in this situation and it doesn't work in this situation. And just you learn all these different things. All that can be taught, but the skill of putting it together, the skill of writing it, comes from just going and doing it, going and writing, going, even if you don't, if you're, you know, working in film, even in music, you know, just try to make something, try to write something.
Yeah.
It can be trash. It can be two notes. It could be a short story about Westerns. It could be, you know, It can be 5 pages long, right? It can be a page long, yeah. Right? Just write something. Like Jerry Seinfeld said, if you want to be a comedian, write a joke every day.
Yeah.
Right? And you will get there. And that's what's up, because it's hard at the beginning because you see all this stuff and you're like, how am I going to do this? Well, you know, I need to do this and to do that and this and that, you know. But always at the end, you're always like, man, that worked out pretty well.
Exactly.
Right? That worked out pretty well. But you could have stopped at the beginning. You could have stopped there knowing it's ridiculous. You have all this work, but that work is a lot less once you pick it up.
Exactly.
Once you pick up the first thing.
I'd like to add something. As much as we say, you know, go for it, do it, it doesn't matter. In some instances, it does matter as far as like if you want to build a fan base, a following, or, you know, really get up off the ground, some of it is going to have to be catering to the audience. You know, in this day and age, you know, even from when we grew up, you know, just 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, things are a lot different as far as political correctness, not stepping on everybody's toes with anything you say. You know, I lean towards a little bit more of the dark humor genre. You can't just go around saying that type of stuff or you can get hurt.
Yeah.
You do have to know, engage your audience in order to get up off the ground in some instances.
That's very true. I'm glad you said that too, because you can say something that will affect a lot of people, especially if you get to the point to where you are an influencer in that space where people look up to you. And you can sort of guide people's life decisions, whether you realize it or not. And that's something you should also take into consideration.
Well, that's apparent just with all the trends like on TikTok and
yeah,
you know, sites like that.
There was this book called The One Thing by Gary Keller. And it talks about how in any successful endeavor, there's always one thing that you can do that gives you the most forward motion and is the simplest. It's simple, it gives you the most forward motion, and it makes it to where everything else is either unnecessary, irrelevant, or nowhere near as difficult. And that is what I would say. And it's interesting that both of y'all pretty much said the exact same thing. Literally, get started. Yeah. And it's easy to just say get started, but pick up a camera, take some pictures. Look back at them in 5 months, and you'll be shocked at how much you've improved from the first month. You're not going to improve unless you do it.
Start writing a story. Start putting down song lyrics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You said you wrote 200 stories or more.
Yeah. Like probably 95% of them were trash.
Okay.
But that's just thinking of, at the moment, all the trash ones come to mind. Right. But I would say there's a decent, because there are some that are, there's a lot of like little short stories I did that ended and that were self-contained.
Yeah.
And you could take them and you could read them. They aren't like groundbreaking, I would say, in certain, like, they're not really out of the box, but they fall into a certain genre. But you can take them, you can read them, and it would be interesting, and you can see kind of what I'm trying to say. And I didn't rush things. Now, a large majority, you're learning.
Exactly.
So a large majority, terrible. Terrible stuff.
And that's what I'm
getting awful at. Writing.
That's what I'm getting at. But you wrote them.
Yes.
You wrote them. And that's the thing. You're going to write terrible stories. You're going to shoot terrible video. You're going to look back at your first stuff and be like, what the hell was I thinking? But that's what gets you to that next step. You're not going to get to that next step unless you take those first few steps. And if you're not confident enough, or if you refuse to take those first steps, you're never going to get to that better.
It's like earlier when we were talking before the podcast started about, you know, how I said, like, I go back and look at films I've made, editing, because, you know, films I've edited.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see at the moment, I thought, this is great. You know, this is great stuff. You know, these are beautiful transitions. I love the way that I set this scene up, whatever. And I look at it now, and I'm like, that is ugly. But I look at it now knowing the more information I have now. At that moment, I had so much information. At that moment, I was looking back before stuff I'd done before. And I'm like, that was terrible because I didn't know this and this. And now I'm here knowing this and this. And I'm saying, now I would have done this. I would have done that. But looking at it then, it was great. Now I'm like, man, it doesn't flow right. The dialogue is terrible. Why did I ever think that was great?
Right.
But I was a certain level. Because you learn all these different, it's part of growth. Like growth, you always look back, knowing how much farther you've gone and thinking, why did I ever think I was ever doing anything great? But that's part of the creation process, right? Because you judge yourself very strongly from your position, from your place where you say, you expect more of yourself now, and you can't have the same expectations back then. But you're looking at it from the expectations you have of yourself now, knowing how great you can be, you could have been, because you are this great. And 10 years from now, you're going to be like, man, that guy was terrible. The stuff you're doing now.
Right. And the crazy thing about that is, because I know a lot of the videos that you're talking about, and you're judging yourself pretty harshly, I remember one specific video that I'm thinking of where you had an entire audience of people watching it in tears because of how you put it together. And I can look back at it now because we kind of worked on it together and say that was not our best work by far. But it moved people. And so you'll surprise yourself. You'll surprise yourself if you just do something. And the more you improve, the next one will be even better. And the next one will be even better.
Just think how much further we have to go.
Exactly.
And but that's what you think about the connection we were talking about earlier. It's like, yeah. So the filming, the work itself wasn't A+.
Right.
Compared to where we are now. But it was real.
Yeah.
It was genuine.
Exactly.
And it was a part of us. It was a connect. It was an emotional, a sincerity that we created this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was thinking of like the one we did together. Which we started. I watched that the other day, and I was like, man, you know, back then, this story was huge. I was getting goosebumps. I was like, this is a great story. And I look back then, I'm like, man, this is terrible. And I don't know why we had the idea to do this. I thought we were sitting on the porch, and it rolls in, and we're talking, and that we were like the main characters. We tied everything together. And I'm sitting here like, why did we ever think it would be cool to zoom in through this guy's eye, right? Into like 12-year flashback. And then you're doing this like, I mean, some of it was nice.
Yeah.
Like the idea, but that was mostly the cinematographer that made it great.
Right.
Like the way he decided to do the camera work, you know, following the guy with the shoulder camera. He's running out looking for his son. You know, that was what made that great.
Yeah.
But our ideas, the way we wrote it, you know, the way we had things, it was like, man, we thought this was dope, you know? And I look at it now, I'm like, man, what is this? The dialogue is like, you can see, like, listen, honestly, you can see the pauses. Yeah. Like we knew we'd done the dialogue 100 times and we're like pausing. You could see we're pausing for the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Dude. But at the moment when I wrote it
and
we were brainstorming, all these people were involved and I'm like, man, it's a breakthrough. Listen, I'm a star now, right? And now I'm like, man, listen, I would have done this 100 different ways. I'm thinking about that scene we did with Vinny. Remember the dialogue? Sometimes when you think, like, man, someone said something about this being Quentin Tarantino level dialogue. We were doing Vinny. He was like, you have to call me Vinny the Thief. And it was a terrible dialogue. I remember some of the guys were like, man, this is like some Quentin Tarantino level dialogue right here, dude. You know, this Vinny, like nobody's, you know, what is this, just conversation? And I look at it now and I'm like, man, it was okay. I mean, I definitely wouldn't pick it up. If I was redoing it, it would still be in there. Yeah. That scene would still be in there, but it wasn't as great as we thought it would.
That was one of the scenes that made you actually connect with the character, though.
Yeah.
Figure out how weird he was.
And then he dies. And it's like his friend's right there. And then he dies in the next couple seconds and it comes out of nowhere. So yeah, like I said, I would have kept it in there, but we were very self-aggrandizing at the moment, thinking about how incredible we were.
Yeah.
And listen, the editing was top tier. It put together very well. Our timing for it. I realized, hey, you know, I'd rather be the director and than the actor. Very quickly. Even though I like to do the acting for the actor, because I know how the character is supposed to be.
Right.
And I feel like I can show them well enough, embody it. Like, I don't have a problem with this. Hey, listen, look at how I do this and then do it. So, okay, I'm trying to follow that. But I learned very quickly, I don't want to be the actor. I'd rather just go in there and try to put it together, man. Because it's a lot. You see the bigger picture.
And you got to find your place. And I don't think you are a bad actor. But like you said, you do incredible at directing. You know?
Yeah. It's like, it's funny because I was doing the camera and he was like, Sean. Was like, you can't run the camera anymore. He's like, listen, no, because you don't pay attention to the camera. You pay attention to the actor.
Yeah.
And so you're just like over here, like your actor's like, put the camera down. You know, it's like, so I'm looking at their feet because so it's like, yeah, it's better if you just direct them because you don't pay attention to the screen. It's like, you just watch it.
But you find your place and that's what you got to do.
There's other ones I look back on. And I don't have a negative opinion on all my work, right?
Right.
Like, no, there's a lot of stuff I've done pretty decently. You know, and like the ones you mentioned, like, they came out. You know, I see where it could have improved. I see certain things, you know, that I know now as far as really just skills that I know now.
Yeah.
But story-wise, I'm pleased with the way that some of those worked out.
Well, like that live play one I did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The security guard one. Man, that was...
That wasn't even your idea.
No.
You had to make it work.
No, I was... It came to a point where it was so pathetic that the crowd was not laughing at the film, but laughing at the actors.
Yeah.
But see, that's
but it's a comedy.
So, but see, ambition. Yeah. See, that's the thing, though. It's ambitious. And that's the thing.
Right, exactly.
And I know that situation you're dealing with, that goes back to, you know, the rigidity of exactly. when someone's in some that's a problem a lot of people have when they first start making things, is they don't understand it cannot be exactly how you see it in your brain.
Especially if you're really restricted on resources, yes. places.
But it's like, even then, it's like the people are different, right? Exactly. In other words, you're writing these characters.
Right.
You're new at this, right? So you don't know how to be different characters. So everything you're here to write is kind of an extension of yourself. Yeah. It's kind of you playing that character. In other words, when you're first starting, really, unless you have like certain knacks, like that I had, that, you know, where which came from all that experience of writing the stories myself. Like, I recognize the difference in certain characters and how the bad guy had to play, how the good guy had to be, and all these different things, and the intensity of certain characters. But, you know, I learned those more and more and more. But when you don't have that kind of stuff, it's really just in your brain. And so you can sit there and look at the dialogue and say, yeah, normal people don't talk that way, right?
Right.
Oh, but the thing is that even like that, like, you see it in the way in your brain, other people talk, act differently than you. So when they're doing the character, they're going to do their version of that character.
Right.
And you can't go, which is what the situation was, I think, you can't go and make that person be you, because right. they're doing the character the way they're going to do it.
Right.
Right. And so then when you get so deep into it that you're trying to do inflection and timing, and that's the problem when it comes to, like, I don't have an experience in live, you know, in Broadway kind of style of theater and these things. So I don't know what it takes to do that. So I know the way the rehearsing is done is definitely different than the way you would just think rehearsing is done. Plus, they're trained in making it seem natural.
Yeah.
Because if you rehearse something, just like if we just sat here and started doing something and do it over and over and over again, it would be rehearsed. It would seem rehearsed.
Right.
Because we don't know. We don't have the training how that's done. And so when you're jumping into this thing, you have that problem there in general of not knowing how to do something live. And then you have people trying to direct everyone to be exactly a certain way they want it to be, and doing the rehearsal 1,000 times.
With kids.
Then it's like, it's not going anywhere. That's another thing, right? When you're dealing with people, right? That's another thing. Which goes back to what we were talking about, film school. You have to learn how to deal with actors.
Yeah.
Now, see, I haven't had to deal with, like, Hollywood famous actors who want their own, you know, I want my trailer, I want catering, all these things. But you have to learn how to deal with people.
Right.
You know, in general, you know, how to talk to people. You know, in other words, you have to be able to tell somebody, I don't like what you're doing, and I want you to do it differently, without making them feel bad.
And to be honest, that's why it's great to start with your friends, your family, because you sort of find your place in that situation.
Yeah.
And you figure out where you work best. You might...
And there's people you know.
Exactly.
So you know, like we were talking about, when, you know, dealing with people, you know these people.
Right.
And you're more comfortable talking to them. And you know how they think, and... It's easy. It's easier for you to not offend them. Right. Be like, you know, if you're dealing with your friends, you'd be like, dude, you're trash. You know, and they're like, whatever.
They're not going to deal out crippling criticism on your first couple.
Well, it depends. It depends on who your friends are.
That's also true.
Right, but if your friends that you've grown up with can cripple you, you're probably not cut out for the business.
Exactly.
You know, that's a great point too, because the business is going to be, or the industry, the creative
everybody's
industry
a critic.
It's going to be harsh.
Is full of critics, and it's going to be. You got to have tough skin.
You got to earn it. You know, you got to earn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many times I've just seen, like, myself. I don't know how many times I've seen, like, people just railing on stuff, and I watch it. I'm like, you know, that isn't half bad.
Right.
Like, it's not incredible. It's not like groundbreaking. But I don't know many times I've seen critics be like, man, this is just this terrible movie. And I watch them like, then it wasn't that bad. It isn't as bad as you guys are saying.
Yeah.
Like, sure, it could be better. But you got to watch it for what it is, right?
Right.
Yeah. And we've come into this time where people feel entitled to tell you their opinion and say, listen, I guess trash. And that there's no repercussions for being a jerk.
Yeah.
And again, tearing something apart. And it's easy to find stuff to attack in anything. It's very easy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could take the greatest films of all time and criticize something. There's something in there that you can criticize.
You know what? And something, if you are a criticizer, somebody who is great at finding problems in something, it's bad if that's all you do is criticize. But take that, that's actually a skill.
Constructive criticism.
Exactly. And take that and then figure out, what can I do to fix that? What can I do to make it better?
And you need that
in your production.
The best criticism is pointing out what's wrong, but also where it could be better. Like, what aspects could be better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, criticism isn't all just looking at something talking and trash. Everybody can look at something talk trash.
You know, you ever just work on something and be like, yeah, I'm glad that's done. I'm never going to watch it or listen to it ever again.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to play it for me. And I don't want you to hear it, honestly, but I'll put it out there. But I'm done with that.
But to be honest, I'm the same way with my music. After I'm finished with it, I don't ever want to hear it again. And maybe a year or two later, I'll go back and listen to it and be like, oh, that was pretty decent. But after I'm done working on it, it's like,
you need numb time.
First song I've turned over to a friend to try to, hey, maybe we can work on this. I meant it as a rock song, but as soon as I pitched the idea, it turned into a children's song.
Yeah.
Oh.
It went from rock to...
It was a slight disconnect in the
sing along in the school bus is how it turned out.
And sometimes I have a difficulty.
I was really embarrassed.
And sometimes that's the situation, you know, honestly, like, you know, people can write songs. Like some songwriters, you know, write the song and give it to somebody else to perform because they can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes, like you can write, perhaps you can write a song.
This is an entire...
But your episode. Voice... Yeah, we just went off into music.
I was literally gonna, before y'all even started, this was totally unscripted. Before y'all even started getting into this, my last question I was gonna ask you was, are you also a musician?
I am, even though I don't play as much.
The reason I wanted to ask that, and it might even be better that it came out organically like that, because something that I have noticed and that I think is weird that they are separated is... Every creative person I know that does video production also, even if they just mess with it...
Dabble in it.
Dabbles in music.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's a massive connection.
And there's
you need music. Connection. You need the score.
Yeah.
And so you start having to dabble with that and dealing with that. Just in that perspective of how the music's going to fit into the emotion.
Right.
And when you're in music, you start to visualize things.
Yeah.
So if you're telling a story in a song, you know, you start to think... Like if you ever... You know, I've dealt with songs before... I've dabbled in working on music videos.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really gotten too deep into it, but I've definitely worked with people with music and been like, man, I can already see the way this music video should work.
Yeah.
You're just, your mind kind of generally goes in that way, especially from the production standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You can, especially if you have experience on both sides, you can blur lines very, very quickly.
Yeah. And so what I was getting at is there's such a disconnect in the online training space when it comes to...
Yeah.
Music and videos, like they're treated as two totally different topics, and they are, but they melt together.
There definitely needs to be a place to bring those together. There
needs to be a connection, and that's what I'm trying to do here.
So, and I think that's interesting because you have experience in both of those.
Yeah.
And so you can come from a position of, hey, there are probably people out here who are interested in both,
yeah,
are working with both, and need tips on both.
Yeah. And that's where I want to connect with people. I don't personally consider myself a quote-unquote professional. But if you ask a lot of people, they would consider me, oh, you're a professional at this stuff. This is what you do. And I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, but I think it's great to come at it from the attitude of always learning new things and always trying to find new ideas, new things like that. Because first, you connect better with other people because you're not this high, mighty, cocky
prick. Standoffish.
Yeah, you're not standoffish. And I want people to be able to, you people listening, really... realize that no, it's something that everybody's learning as you go.
You people.
Yeah. No.
Listen, you people. Listen, you people listening. No, I get that. Yeah. And I think I don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking something. I'll tell you that. I did think.
You thought?
I did thunk. Thunk a thunk.
Sweet.
But
I think that's a great place to close out though. What do you think were the main points that people should get out of this conversation that we had?
I appreciated the conversation we had about where this creativity comes from, because I think should understand that, you know, you don't have to be a fame. You don't have to, like, we're not saying, listen, you need to go out and be, you know, the next movie star, next famous director. But we are saying, hey, even if you think that you're not 100% talented, it is a muscle.
Exactly.
Creativity is something you can develop, something you can learn. And that it is developed from certain things. It's not 100% just in their genes and people are just born with disability. It's an ability. It's learned.
And that helps though. But
there is an affinity. That's what I was looking for. An affinity to it. And predisposition. But you're not helpless. You're not hopeless if you don't understand and you feel like maybe you're just not supposed to.
If
you really want to, you can figure it out.
What about you? What do you think was?
Well, one thing I'd like to say why we're here discussing this is so we can help other young people that are just coming up in it, you know, discovering their own talents or trying to practice them. You know, we're just going through this ourselves and it's been a big process just to get as far as we have with what little we know, but trusting yourself, you know, believing in yourself, you know, not necessarily listening to what everybody says against you. You know, you got to believe in yourself to be able to make it work.
Thanks.
All right. You need to say something to close it out.
A lot of podcast hosts close out by how can people find you?
Yeah, we don't have a place we can find you.
Yeah.
No, follow me. Follow me on Instagram, you guys. No, if you guys follow me on Instagram, they'll hate me. Please don't go back on my Facebook and Twitter and Instagram because I've said some stuff. That being said, I stand by everything I said. Like, I was going to post something on my Facebook that said, listen, if I'm going to get famous in a couple years and you go and reread my Facebook, understand, no matter what I say, I meant every word. And I still do. All right, so there's going to be some way where you just... You need a catchphrase. You need like, all right. All right. Audio video peers, keep peering. From David and David, the three Davids here at AV Peers, I want to say, keep creating. Don't make me do it for you. All right, guys, look, we have gone way too far with this podcast, probably 3 hours long. I don't know how it's going to get chopped up. David, I would ask you to close us out, but I know that I'm a better public speaker than you. So I'm going to go ahead and take it by saying, hey, guys. If you're not following the podcast, what's wrong with you? You need to follow this. You need to follow us on Instagram, AV Peers. No caps, yes caps, no spaces, that's for sure. Also YouTube, great YouTube channel. Not that I follow it, but wow. I will eventually subscribe. And go to avpeers.com. I'm sure there's stuff on there. It's great stuff. If you're not, listen, honestly, if you're not following, what's wrong with you? You shouldn't be. I'm not following because I'm an idiot.
Oh, do follow and do subscribe.
Oh, if you want to audition for the host of AV Peers,
we're kicking you.
We are having auditions for people to actually do the talking.
Thanks.
Anybody a professional voiceover coach?
Thanks so much, guys.
You should say, next week we'll have Ken Taplon here to teach us how to do voiceovers.
Yeah.
Because we can't sing, but we can't talk either.
They crazy, but you definitely gotta be a little bit loopy if you wanna make it as a creative individual. You gotta have fun. You just gotta have fun. So that's it, guys. Don't check them out on Instagram or Facebook or any of the places because they don't want you to. But do subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, please. And please also leave an honest review on iTunes as well because it really helps this show to get noticed. That would really be appreciated. Anywho, until the next time, keep creating. And I can't wait to serve you on the next episode of the AV Peers podcast. Peace, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the AV Peers audiovisual production podcast at www.avpeers.com.